originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to the show trainers listen to. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer, the pontiff of the Pick Four himself, Jude Feld, and we are coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios right here in the heart of the Bluegrass, and want to welcome everybody tuning in nationwide on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201, and of course all of you who are tuning in either via our live streaming or via podcast on our website. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net, and happy to have you aboard. And JT, we've kind of been on a streak here on Trainer Talk the past couple of weeks where we've had a few different trainers on it, and a few female trainers at that, and it's been a lot of fun to hear their stories and to get a chance to visit with them.
Yeah, it's really been interesting. We've been on a kind of a roll with the girls,
and yeah,
it's great. My dad had a woman trainer in the 50s, and so we're very, very pro woman trainer in my house. My kid's mom had a trainer's wife badge, if you can believe it or not, in 1981 when women weren't allowed after 7 o'clock on the backside. 1981, it seems like so archaic.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm glad that that we have a lot of gals getting their trainer's license now, and I always had a lot of girls working for me. I found that they really got along well with the horses.
Well, we are only 51 days away from the first Friday in May and the Kentucky Oaks, right? So right. Why not welcome yet another female trainer to the broadcast here today? And you're going to like this show. This is going to be a lot of fun. She is 26 years old. She was born in Portland, Oregon, raised in Battleground, Washington. And if you're wondering where on earth that is, it is just north of Portland and about 2.5 hours south of Seattle. Since saddling her first starter in October of last year, she has sent out 37 starters in her very young career. Two of those have won, and she is with us now. She is Anna Mia, and happy to have her aboard for this program here tonight. Anna, welcome to Trainer Talk.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. I appreciate you for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing your story. I mentioned being born in Portland, but growing up in Battleground. Tell us a little bit about Battleground. That's a place I'm sure not too many people have heard of.
No, it's a small rural city, and it's grown quite a bit since I've left. But it's very close to Vancouver, Washington, which I'm sure a lot of people are more familiar with, not to be mistaken with Canada. But it's definitely a little bit out in the country.
Are they building a statue of you there now?
They should be, but we're probably a little early for that.
What is there to do?
I got a little bit more to accomplish.
What is there to do on a Saturday night in Battleground, Washington?
You know, that's a good question. Even I probably couldn't answer that. I spent most of my weekends on the back of the horses doing rodeos and a bunch of competitions.
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, that's what maybe why you got into rodeos and stuff, right? Because there wasn't a lot of things going on, so you wanted to have some activity. Would that be true?
It could be part of it. I loved the horses ever since I was a young child, so I don't think I really had much of a choice. But
mm-hmm. Did you have horses?
It was in my blood early.
You had horses at home?
I do. Yeah. I do. I still have one of my first horses back home. She's going to be, I want to say, 35 this year.
Wow.
My dad still looks after her, so.
Good care, obviously, for 35
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing a little homework on Battleground, Washington before I asked those questions, right? And I said, okay, there's got to be something about Battleground that you can latch on to and people would know. Well, there are different people, notable people who have been either living in Battleground or have lived in the area. Former Major League slugger Richie Sexson. Remember him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually grew up in neighboring Brush Prairie. Is that real close?
Yes, it is pretty close. I want to say it might be 5 miles, maybe 10 at the most, but it's not far at all.
All right. Here's one that people will know. Tanya Harding. Remember Tanya Harding?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
She was very close to me, actually. I want to say, because that was Yakult, Washington, correct?
Yeah, she lived near Battleground is what it says. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's another. That's just north of Battleground. Probably maybe 15, 20 minutes north. It's a very, very small city. I mean, way smaller than Battleground even, but we always tell people Battleground because it's a little bit bigger and more familiar.
Yeah, it does say that she was actually arrested by Battleground police in 2002 for drunken driving and crashing her pickup into a ditch. Do you remember that incident?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I do remember the story. I don't know if I was really around, but I do remember that.
It's a good thing you went into horse sports instead of ice skating, right?
I had bigger plans.
Good for you.
Well, Anna Mia is our guest, and she had a much different upbringing in Battleground, Washington, and she was around horses from a very, very young age. So, Anna, why don't you take us back to the beginning and tell us about how you got interested in horses in the first place?
In the first place? When I was a young kid, I grew up, obviously, around them. My grandparents had a couple horses, and obviously, that caught my eye at a very young age of 2 when I started asking for a horse. I want to say I was about 5 or 6 when I did finally get my first horse, and since then it's just been kind of nonstop. I did the rodeos and the equestrian drill team, if you're familiar with that, and later got involved. I really enjoyed the medicine side of things and was working a bit with a vet, which kind of got me in the door at the racetrack and started from the bottom doing the grooming and walking horses and stuff at a small farm, a quarter horse farm, actually, in Brush Prairie, the Scott Rayleigh, and graduated on to come to California.
What is the equestrian drill team?
That, a lot of people ask that question, and I wish that more people knew about it, because it's a very neat sport, if you want to call it that. It's a probably about a team of 16 people. We all dress the same. We carry flags, and you do rodeo events or just drill competitions. It's basically a high speed, just a bunch of maneuvers, and it's hard to explain. You probably have to YouTube it. But I rode with a team called Latigo and Lace, and we traveled all over the Northwest and won a lot of the competition. So that it was a lot of fun. I did that for about 7 years.
It's a beautiful thing to watch to be around. And when you do see it, you enjoy it. I think most people would enjoy it because
it's
flashy.
Yes, exactly. And I don't think it's very well known, especially, I mean, even in horse racing, people probably wonder what the heck that is, but it is, it's very neat and quite an adrenaline rush, especially to be actually a part of it.
There's actually some colleges, I think, that have teams and compete, and it's big in some states and not so big in others.
Exactly. I'm not even familiar that California has much of it, but I know they last year they went to a competition in California, but obviously I'm not on the team anymore, but I do follow them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you were still involved in the sport in any way.
Not really. Obviously, if I was closer to home and, around there, I would like to be. But, my friends still are a part of it. And through social media, I kind of keep up with them and watch their competitions and stuff.
Anna, we've been hosting this program now for, 6 or 7 years. And I think that you're the first person that we've talked with, the first trainer that's ever said that you were part of the equestrian drill team. So that's really unique and something that's pretty neat.
Very neat. I recommend if people aren't familiar with that to just take a look, and if they get time to watch that one day, it's very fun.
I don't remember Suge being part of the equestrian drill team, do you?
No. Suge might be the coach of the drinking team.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I want to try and make that team, actually. But Anna Mia with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. As you heard, she's been around horses her entire life, and she is now training horses out on the West Coast. She is in California after having grown up in Washington. And Anna, you're dealing with a very difficult situation out there right now with the Santa Anita racetrack and all of those types of things. As a young trainer, just trying to get started, how are you coping with all of that?
You know, I actually, it was stressful when it first came upon us. And I think a lot of trainers really panicked and took action fast. You know, there's people are shipping out of here, trying to find races up north, back east. And I just kind of took the conservative route, laid low for a bit. You know, the track was actually only closed for 2 days. So I did walk the horses the first day and tack walked them the second day. And we were able to get back on the training track the third day. So my owners were all really good. You know, they said, it's fine. We trust you. It's in your hands to look after the horses. And I said, if things don't change, you know, then we'll step to plan B. But as for now, if we just kind of sit tight, sit cozy, well, I think we'll be all right. And it seems like they've got everything back rolling today. They had the main track open for workers, which was the first day for that. And the morning's been great so far. So very quiet, which is kind of what we need to get the media off of us, I think, a bit.
Well, it's a, you know, unfortunate situation, and hopefully they've got things back going in the right direction. I mean,
absolutely.
I'm sure the weather was a huge factor, and it's.
I think so.
Just a terrible winter for people across the country. I mean, we've lost hundreds of turf races to weather, so the turf horses are behind, and it's unfortunate. I hope they get it figured out and we can go back to normal.
Absolutely. That's what we're all banking on here. We're happy to see the horses back on the main track, and we got the condition book out last night, so that's exciting. You know, we should be back up and rolling by next weekend.
What are some of the more significant changes that you've had to make in order to keep your horses fit and keep them ready to run when things do open back up?
You know, I've really taken the conservative route because this isn't the first, you know, week that we've kind of had a setback as far as training goes. On those really heavy days of rain, I would opt to walk the horses versus take them to the track, you know, if I didn't think the track was in great condition. I'm never against giving them a day or two off. I mean, it's not gonna set us back that far. So if that's what we had to do for a couple days, and like I said, ace and jog for a couple, I just would not turn them around to gallop them until I felt that the track was 100% to do that. Obviously we missed out on a few workouts, but I think everybody's kind of in the same boat, and we're all kind of having to recoup and get back into action together.
You know, Jude would know the answer to this question, but I'll go ahead and ask you, Anna, since I've never trained racehorses before. If you miss a few works, how significant is that from a fitness level standpoint? Do you lose a lot of fitness just from missing a few works?
I don't think so in a horse that's already fit. There's a lot of horses that I think if they've been running and, you know, have had consistent workouts, that missing a work or two isn't going to set them back much. If it's a young horse or a horse that hasn't ran, you're trying to get fit, that obviously would be a pretty big step back for you.
Yeah, horses that are racing on a regular basis, I mean, a lot of times the extra day off, like you mentioned, can just do wonders for them. They don't mind it.
Absolutely.
It's just like us taking a day off of work, you know. No kid ever minded a snow day. But, I remember one winter, it was very similar to the winter we just had, and the track was terrible every day. And Bobby Frankel was either shed rowing the horses or just walking them. And, And then when the track got back to normal, he galloped everything for like 5 or 6 days, worked everything 7 furlongs, and he won 14 races in 2 weeks' time.
Wow.
I mean, it was incredible. And it was one of the greatest training feats I've ever seen. And it just goes to show how brilliant he was. But yeah, I mean, you have to adjust. That's the trainer's main job, is to make those adjustments along the way. And there are certain trainers that if they mark a work on their training chart, that horse is going to work. And those types of trainers are kind of falling by the wayside. That's way old school.
Right.
That's like 1920s old school. You know, but that's your job, is to figure out when it's safe and how to do it the best you can do it. You know, I think
Absolutely.
Most trainers today, they subscribe to that type of training.
Yes, which in my opinion is very important. I mean, they're all different. They can't just train off the chart. I mean, there's very, very few horses that can actually do that and come out on top, you know?
Yeah.
Anna, I mentioned that you've only saddled 37 starters to this point anyway. You have the two victories from those 37 starters, but one of your first starters, Excellent Sunset, kind of gave you the highest high and the lowest low all in one race. Tell me about that.
Oh, yeah, that was quite the disappointment. But at the same time, you know, it was very bittersweet. I have a really, really good team behind me, and we all worked very hard. And for that accomplishment, even though it was a disqualification, it was huge. At the end of the day, it's horse racing, and unfortunately, that was the steward's call. But the filly ran awesome, and to know that even with that disqualification, we did get to the wire first, and what a big race to do that in.
Yeah, not only was it a disqualification, but it was a disqualification with, well, it would have been your first winner, right? In a stakes race. Yeah, the Catherine Crosby Stakes at Del Mar. So that has to sting even a little bit more.
Oh, big time, big time. And, you know, she came back for me here at Santa Anita, and they asked me a couple times. They said, do you think that, you know, she could do it again? I said, I really think she could be my first place winner, you know, twice, but unfortunately she ran second. But I've had so many seconds, it's not even funny, but I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
Well, I just need a few of them to turn into some wins.
Yeah, that's what Charlie Whittingham always said, the seconds turn into wins, so just stay the course, you'll get
so
there.
I should be sitting on a lot of wins. I'm looking forward to when that day comes.
How about your first official win as a trainer, Anna? Take us back to that day.
That was really nice. I mean, that was a world of weight lifted off my shoulders. I mean, it was so nice. It was stringent. We actually claimed him back in Del Mar. I want to say it was towards the end of the meet. And I wasn't training at the time, but I claimed him with Dan Blacker, who kept him for me. And I came back to run him. I want to say the first time I ran him, he ran second for me. It just got caught at the end. And I honestly thought he was going to get caught again for that race, but he just hung on, you know, enough to get us that first win. So that was really neat.
It hasn't been easy for you, has it? First, you're getting disqualified in the stakes. Then you have to sweat that one out when it's a close finish. Wouldn't you like to have a horse that just draws off and wins by 20?
I would love it.
Send her
I
one.
I would absolutely love that.
Well, that's what we're hoping, that people listening to this show will send you a couple of horses, and we'll
Please.
Get one that'll draw off and win by 15 or 20. That would be pretty nice when you don't have to
be fantastic.
Sweat it out. When did you first realize that training thoroughbreds was going to be the thing you wanted to do?
You know, a lot of people ask me that, and I have a hard time answering it because it wasn't ever really in my, I guess, in my path, per se. I mean, I came out here with the intention of riding. Obviously, I love being on the back of a horse. And I got a little bit more responsibilities at the Sherman Barn, which was my first, you know, I guess, official job in California. And that's where I took out my assistant license. So once I started to get more responsibility, you know, I really enjoyed that. And I was working for Richard Baltus for a year as well, and had a lot of very good opportunities there that kind of helped me step out on my own.
Yeah, maybe your best opportunity when you were working with Richard Baltus came with your now husband, David, right?
Absolutely. He's, he's been a big supporter of this, and you know, for being a bloodstock agent, he's got a lot of clients behind him who obviously have trust in him that definitely helped me step out with, you know, having a foundation of clients who could trust me.
What was his role with Richard?
He was mostly, I want to say, I guess, a barn manager. He did get on horses. He bought horses for Richard. But, you know, as anybody knows, having a barn of 100-plus horses, you definitely need somebody to kind of step in and help you. And he did a lot for Richard, and I'm glad to see that they still are able to work together, and I know he's still buying horses for him, so it's good to see that relationship still continue.
Yeah, it's when you find somebody that you like and you trust and you know, they do well for you, it really you don't want to let that person go, and
absolutely.
You know, so I think that's to your husband's credit that Richard, you know, values him, and now he's got you to worry about.
Right? Exactly. Absolutely. And you know, he's still buying horses from I want to say even like Pete Miller, John Sadler, Andrew Lerner. So he stays busy. He's definitely traveling all the sales this year. He's at the Ocala sale today. But he'll be going back to England and everything this year. So he's here for me part-time.
Yeah, native of England. What was it, the English accent that got you, Anna?
You know, it was, but I don't even hear it anymore, so that's a disappointment. I've got too used to it.
That's great. What's it like working? I know, because I work with my wife here on the network, but what's it like working with your husband?
You know, we actually really enjoy it. Obviously, before we went out, everyone gives you their opinion whether you want it or not. And, you know, they say, oh, it's not going to work. You can't work with your husband. And it is still early, but we've actually had some of the best times working together. I mean, we're both doing what we love, and we're able to spend time together. Like I said, he travels a lot, so when he is here, it's nice for us to spend time together. And we both have knowledge on the horse, obviously riding him and working with him every day. So it's nice to have somebody that I can really trust for a second opinion if I need one as well.
You know, I read a quote in a story, it might have been a Ray Pollock story that was published about you, and you said that when you left Washington State in December of 2012, you packed your car as full as you could and drove to California. You didn't know anybody, but you had dreams and were determined to chase those dreams, and nobody was going to get in the way of that. Well, mission accomplished, but how scary was it for you to just pack up and leave everything you knew and come to California not knowing anybody?
You know, I had mixed feelings, but I was more excited than I was scared. I always have been like that since a kid, and I think my parents were probably a little bit more timid about it than I was, especially when they knew I was going to Hollywood Park. Of course, it sounds scary because it's in Inglewood. But it ended up not being as bad as I thought it would. Obviously, when you don't know anybody, that's kind of scary, but everyone was very nice, and David was actually one of the first people I met out here that, you know, helped me out and kind of give me a boost and some barns to get going, and things took off pretty quick for me.
We have a very engaging personality. I mean, you know, I talked to you for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and you were just so pleasant, and I thought to myself, oh, she's going to be great on the air. You know, because sometimes we have people here that you have to like have to pull answers out of, you know.
Well, that's not good.
They answer yes and no to open-ended questions.
Yeah, that you know, you say that, Drew, but that her personality, Anna, that had to go a long way toward helping you get started and get into these barns and get these jobs that you were able to get early on.
I think so. I met a lot of really good people along the way, and the Sherman Barn really got me started. Like I said, they put a great foundation on me, and working with California Chrome, that's a no-brainer. That was great. That handed me a lot of opportunities. So I don't know how I got that fortunate, but I guess when you're determined, good things happen to you.
Yeah, Anna Mia. I keep wanting to say Maya. Remember we talked about that before we started the program. We're like, okay, exactly. Anna, is it Maya or Mia? Because it is Mia. Spelled M-E-A-H, folks. So if you're looking
Correct.
For Anna as a trainer, M-E-A-H is how you spell her last name.
Like Hialeah.
Yeah. What did I say? Mia Omaya, right? Anna Mia here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to continue the conversation in the second half of the show. We're a couple minutes away from our bottom of the hour commercial break here, Anna. And we will talk a lot more about California Chrome because I know he was very special to you, and being around him had to be a special time in your life, especially for somebody that, as we said just a few moments ago, packed everything into her car and drove down, not knowing where you're going to end up, and you end up being around a horse like California Chrome. That's pretty cool.
For sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that conversation coming up in the second half of the show. Don't forget that you can always tune in to this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows at horseracingradio.net, the podcast available for you each and every week. And, of course, you can tune in with us live 6 to 7 Eastern here on the network every Wednesday and really hear all these stories because they are simply fascinating. So outside of the Shermans, Art and Alan, who are some of the other people that kind of helped you when you first got down there to California?
To be honest, Dave, my now husband, was a huge help. There was a lot of times that, you know, I didn't know, should I do this, should I do that? And he always kind of gave me the boost to go through with it. And just like training, you know, he always had the confidence in me to be successful at it, and I had to trust him because he's been right this long. He may as well be right this time. So everything's been going really good so far.
You mentioned that you love to be on the back of a horse. Do you get to ride your own horses when they're out there in the mornings, or do you have somebody that does it for you?
I do. Me and my husband both get on them, and then I also have one other rider that helps me. Jose is his name, Jose Bazan, and he's also kind of stepped up and done some afternoon feeding for me and everything to kind of take some of the pressure off me. He's doing a really good job as well.
Yeah, it's great when you find somebody like that has a total interest in your barn and is willing to come back and help out in the afternoons and do that kind of
big
stuff.
Time.
Yeah, it's big really time. Great, especially when you have a small stable.
Yep.
Is there any advantage to being the one that's on the back of your horses? Do you learn something a little extra maybe that you wouldn't when an exercise rider is doing it for you?
I think it's a huge advantage. I mean, I know there's a lot of trainers that don't ride, but for me to be able to watch a horse train is totally different to being on it. You know, sometimes you see a horse and you're watching it train and you want to correct something, and it's not always as easy as you think until you are on the back of them. But it's nice for me to be able to watch them, and if I don't like something or if I'm interested, you know, to see why the horse is doing that or how he feels, it's great for me to be able to swing a leg over and get the feel for myself.
Yeah, well, she's done a tremendous job in this very young career. She's just getting started. She is Anna Mia, and she's our special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Stay with us. Second half of the show coming up, we'll tell you all about her time with the great California Chrome. That's next right here on Trainer Talk.
Nominate now to the 2019 Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old in Training Sale. The Gulfstream Sale was the number one ranked 2-year-old sale in 2018 by ROR on pinhooks and percentage of profitable pinhooks, with an average of more than $385,000 and a median of $295,000. And more horses sold for $1 million or more than any other 2-year-old sale in America last year. It's the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 27th, 2019. Nominate now at FasigTipton.com.
Now standing at Buck Pond Farm, Bet on Red, Wildcat Red.
Wildcat Red runs away to an impressive score in the Hutchison.
After winning the Grade 3 Hutchison, Wildcat Red goes on to win the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth in near record time. Faster than Pulpit, faster than Thunder Gulch, and faster than 49er. Multiple graded stakes winner and Grade 1 performing millionaire, Wildcat Red. Also standing at Buck Pond, V.E. Day. After winning three in a row at Belmont and Saratoga, V.E. Day wins the Grade 1 Traverse in one of the most exciting finishes in history with a speed rating of 112.
But here comes V.E. Day with a final try. Who will win the Traverse? It will be too close to call.
Major League Belmont and Saratoga talent, V.E. Day. For more information, contact Buck Pond Farm at www.buckpond.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Good Samaritan, the last great son of Harlan's Holiday. A debut winner at Saratoga, followed by 14 consecutive graded stakes performances. A Grade 2 winner on dirt and turf.
Good Samaritan to the Breeders' Cup.
Good Samaritan has taken the lead and he's pulling away.
Out of the family of Sky Mesa, Bernstein, and Champion Outstandingly. The last great son of Harlan's Holiday is only at Windstar Farm.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're coming to the top of the stretch, and California Chrome makes his move for the lead. It is California Chrome on the outside. Samrat runs at him with the gate pole. California Chrome is pulling away. California Chrome into the final furlong. He's got a five-length lead on his competition. It is California Chrome in front. And from the back of the pack on the outside, Commanding Curve is taken second. But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby. Commanding Curve was second. And then came Danza in third. The final time, 2 minutes, 3.66 seconds.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN. That was Larry Colmus with the call of the 2014 Run for the Roses, the Kentucky Derby, and California Chrome, just one of so many memorable moments he provided in that stellar career. Boy, what a victory that was that day, and it was a popular victory for his unbelievable connections of Art Sherman and his son Alan, who went down that road together, father and son. And if you remember, Alan Sherman joined us on this program just a few weeks ago, and he talked about being part of California Chrome. If you missed that show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And by the way, you'll be able to listen to this show in its entirety as well with our special guest, Anna Mia. And Anna, I know that that horse, California Chrome, meant so much to you. You referenced it in the first half of the show. He was a special horse, and it was a special time in your life to be around him.
Absolutely. That was a once-in-a-lifetime horse, which I hope not. I mean, I hope I run into another one, but for me to run into a horse like that so early in my career in horse racing is quite the blessing.
Well, he won the Derby by 5. It's not 20, but hopefully you'll get one of those.
I'll be okay with 5. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah, I can remember being out there for the, what was it? Was it the Santa Anita Derby, I guess? And one thing that always struck me about him is that when they would turn for home and Victor would ask him to run, he would just instantly draw away. It was like this instant acceleration, and he'd put the field away, and it didn't matter what happened from that point on because he was in front by so much, they weren't going to catch him anyway. Do you remember, does that make any sense to you, that what I'm talking about there? Do you remember that turn of foot?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, that was one of his many great qualities. I had the opportunity to work him quite a few times, and I wish that I could have just let him go because you can tell you've just got so much horse underneath you, and to watch him run like that, I mean, even talking about it still gives me chills.
What's that like when you're on a horse that you know is that good? I mean, is that like a unbelievable buzz?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing that you can actually feel that good of a horse underneath of you and just know even before they go out there and you know, prove it.
What kind of horse was he to ride in the mornings?
As a two-year-old, he wasn't very nice. it took him a long time to actually develop. Even physically, he wasn't the most beautiful two-year-old by any means, but he developed into such a gorgeous horse and his conformation. And he was very nice, but of course, at the end of the day, he was a colt, and I'm sure he bit a few people. I know of a few myself, but he he was a very nice horse to be around. I definitely won't forget a horse like him.
How much being around him boosted your career? I mean, does that give you an extra sense of I really know what to do with a good horse when I get one kind of thing?
I think so. Obviously, I mean, having a horse like that, it's not even just the horse. You've got to deal with so much other things as far as, you know, the media. And that was a whole different experience for me because I've never had to deal with anything like that other than just working with horses. But I did learn a lot and how to handle it as, you know, as the ride went on. And I think that opened a lot of doors for me, as, like you said, as a confidence builder.
You know, that's interesting you bring up dealing with the media and interacting with the media, Anna. I know when Chris McCarron had his jockey school, one of the things that he would teach the young riders was how to conduct themselves in that particular setting, when you are doing an interview or you're on television, whatever it might be. How important is that for not only jockeys but exercise riders to be able to conduct themselves in a professional manner like that?
I think it's huge. And a lot of people don't, I think, understand that. Maybe the experience itself is very different. It's not anything that I've ever been overly comfortable with. But after doing it, you know, multiple times, it does become a little bit easier. But I've always just known to handle myself very professionally and honestly at that.
Have you gotten the chance to come back to Kentucky and visit with him yet?
I did. I was back there for Richard last year during the Keeneland meet, and I went out to TaylorMade to see him, and that was very neat. I have the video. My husband actually took it of me when I went out to the field to see him. He came running over to the fence. So I hope he actually remembered me. It was either that or the Mrs. Pasture's cookies. Maybe a mixture of both, but I'll give myself that little edge that he did remember who I was.
Do you think horses do remember?
I do. I think smart horses like him, I definitely think they can remember people.
Yeah, I've seen it happen at Old Friends where a trainer goes out and the horse comes running right over. Exercise rider, Silver Charms exercise rider, Christian Dickinson, she's a friend of mine. When she was here for a sale, I took her out there and Silver Charm came running over to see her, and he obviously recognized her. So I think the horses do. I think if especially if they're an important horse, because important horses are usually very intelligent.
Yes, it's very neat to see those kind of connections.
What's your favorite California Chrome story that you like to tell?
That's tough. I don't know. I mean, he's got so many amazing stories. I mean, every race he ran in was just, they were amazing. Obviously Dubai was a great experience. I wasn't able to go over there, but I mean, I watched it, and that's an experience in itself to know that, you know, a horse that you work with every day just won the Dubai World Cup. I mean, the Kentucky Derby at first was huge. So for him to go on and do things like that and know that I had such a personal connection with him was great.
Art and Alan Sherman are two of the nicest people that you're ever going to meet in thoroughbred racing. And I had the great fortune, as we were covering California Chrome and doing all three broadcasts of the Triple Crown that year, to spend a lot of time with both of them. What was it like being around them and working around them and the entire team as you made your way through California Chrome's career?
They are great people. I mean, their entire family is wonderful. I met, you know, all their outside family who isn't even involved at the track, and they've been family to me from day one. They've helped me along the way, and I couldn't say a bad thing about any of them. They're all great, and especially their team at the barn. He's had the same staff forever, and that goes to show you a lot about a person if their staff stays around for as long as they have. So I definitely stay connected with them still, and very happy to have them a part of my past career as well.
Well, Art's such a down-to-earth guy, and you know, he never was a big media guy either. It was kind of funny watching him, you know, have to deal with the media all the time, because I know he would much rather be doing something else. but he most, did it. He did it gracefully.
I think are.
Yeah. He got to be pretty good with it.
Very good.
I think it was a wonderful interview.
Eventually, got to enjoy it being in the spotlight. You know, after years and years of being a Northern California trainer and not really having the big horse and all that stuff, and I think he really got to enjoy it. But the first few interviews were like, oh boy, do I have to do this again? But he got used to answering the same questions over and over again.
Anna, how about when Chrome was crowned Horse of the Year for the first time in 2014? What do you remember about that night?
That was great too. I didn't go to that to the awards, but I mean, it's
did they bring you to anything?
You just want to pinch yourself. Yeah, you're dreaming.
Right. Did they bring you to anything, or did they make you sit home for all these big events?
I stayed home for most of them, to be honest. But it was just as equally beneficial because I was handed over the reins at the barn. You know, I learned so much doing that, and I can't say that it hasn't helped me. You know, that was definitely my first big experience as far as coming to races and saddling some horses and more like one-on-one talk with personal clients. And I mean, it really was a big step for me to have to kind of go out and do that on my own.
Yeah, I can imagine that had to be extremely beneficial and is still paying dividends for you even now. Talk about some of the things that you were able to learn taking care of the barn when they were gone and some of those things that you're still using today.
Definitely working with the vets and medication, obviously, as any trainer knows, that's very important that you know your medications and especially withdrawal hours. That was huge. And it was hard for me because they were in Dubai for so long. I want to say it was the second time they went over there. I think they were there for 3 months. And it was kind of hard to have communication with them at that point because, as you know, it's a 12-hour difference. So they were sleeping and I was getting up. It was kind of hard to have any conversations with them and really make a decision with them. It was sometimes I just kind of had to trust my instinct and go with the flow of things. But it all worked out really well, and we had success while they were gone, and very happy to have had that opportunity as well.
How do you describe your training philosophy now?
That's a hard one to answer. I mean, you know, I've been very confident in all my decisions that I've made, and I think that's really big. You kind of have to be all in if you're going to go forth with a decision. If I've ever second-guessed anything, I just don't do it.
That's a great rule to have. Do you think about your horses all the time? I mean, is it like constantly in your brain, like, what am I going to do with this one or that one? Or yeah.
All the time. I mean, I kind of knew that would happen just because I've taken my past job so seriously as well. I mean, even at Richard's Run, he has so many horses, and I would go home and dream of, you know, anything. If I had to do medication, if I had to work a horse the next day, I would always have these horses on my mind, and that definitely hasn't changed.
Yeah, I know that you spent some time at Montana State University studying animal science. Are there some things that you learned in college that you're applying today?
You know, not so much on the equine side of it. I did learn, you know, a little bit about the nutrition and reproduction, which obviously reproduction hasn't been big in this part of my career. Not to say it won't help me down the road, but I think the nutrition is helpful. Obviously, our nutrition takes these horses, makes them look well and perform great. So I think that's been a big help for me.
How much time will you spend talking with some of the more established trainers out there and maybe picking their brain and asking them questions? Will you do much of that?
You know, I honestly haven't. Richard Bolt has probably taught me the most as far as he's a very conservative trainer as well. You know, I've never seen him overtrain a horse, which is nice to know and apply because he's been a very successful trainer and he has a lot of very sound horses that perform great. So he's been probably one of the biggest people that would, you know, has helped me along the way. And still to this day, if I have a question, I know he's always happy to help. But so far I've been pretty good. I haven't had to reach out to anybody. You know, I've been making a lot of my own decisions, which it seems like is leading me in the right direction so far. Like I said, if I could just turn some of the seconds into winners, that'd be great.
Yeah, once you hang that sign up that has your name on it and you're the person whose name's in the program, everything kind of changes.
Absolutely.
It's all on your shoulders.
Yeah,
so you think about that a lot.
I do. You know, I mean, it's when you're working under somebody, the past two jobs that I've had that have been, you know, very detrimental to me, I've always treated them as my own anyway. But like you said, you know, to see your name in the program and know that, you know, eyes are on you and your name, it is a lot different.
Yeah, I can imagine when you walked into the paddock with that very first starter and you looked around and you saw some of those other trainers, you had to be wondering to yourself, do I really belong here?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially as you guys mentioned, you know, being a woman in the sport isn't really what you see every day, especially as a trainer.
Does that make a difference?
I don't know. I mean, to me, I haven't had any trouble. Everyone in California has been extremely supportive, even my fellow trainers. And I don't think that I have lost any, you know, clients per se for being a woman. I haven't really noticed it being difficult in that, you know, the training area of it. But I do know, you know, we're not looked upon as often as the male trainers, but there's also a lot more male trainers out there.
Yeah. Win a couple Kentucky Derbies and nobody will be able to say anything to you.
Exactly. Then we'll be good to go.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, quite frankly, when we started the program, I referred to the fact that we were having yet another female trainer on the program. And to be honest, I don't care for that term a whole lot because, you know, you're a horse trainer.
Right.
And that's
right.
I mean, that's the bottom line. You are a horse trainer. It doesn't matter, you know, what gender you are. And that's the way it should
right.
be in this
yeah.
sport.
Yeah. We have so many great trainers that are women that I can see why Anna's not had,
so,
had any
yeah,
problem
okay.
with
I'll give
that.
You a great example of that. I just returned from Florida. I emceed the FTBOA Awards Gala on Monday evening, and Kathleen O'Connell was awarded the Leading Trainer Award for, I believe it was the eighth consecutive year, or maybe it was the ninth. She might have actually been the ninth
oh, wow.
consecutive year. I mean, she is exceptional at what she does in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, she's one of the names that comes to mind. I mean, one of the biggest pioneers, Kathy Walsh,
yeah.
she was a leading trainer in Washington for many years, and nobody messed with her.
Yeah.
So it's possible.
Anna, did you have trainers that you looked up to before you packed everything up and moved down to Southern California? Were there other trainers that you said, boy, if someday I could only be like them? Were there trainers like that?
You know, to be honest, there wasn't. I've taken a lot from a lot of different trainers, and I think that's been really good because everybody, you know, everyone thinks they're doing it the right way, and to take just those little things from different people, I think, is very, very helpful.
You used the term overtrain just a short time ago when you were talking about Richard Baltus. You said he never really overtrains a horse. What does that mean?
I see a lot of trainers out here that just gallop and gallop and gallop every single day and working these horses every, you know, 6-7 days. I don't think that's exactly necessary, especially referring back to when, you know, we mentioned sometimes these horses, when they're fit, they don't need to do that every day. There's nothing wrong with giving them a day off or throwing in a jog day. It's not going to set you back, in my opinion.
If you could wave a magic wand and accomplish anything in the sport that you wanted to overnight, what would it be?
Oh, that's a tough question. That's put me on the spot. I want to win big races. You know, I'm not here just to win a couple of races and a couple of titles. I'd love to see my name, you know, at the Kentucky Derby, maybe Dubai, or even over anywhere overseas. You know, I really want to see my horses and my staff and clients, I want to see us all do really big things together.
Yeah, I mean, the world's gotten so small now, and it's easy to, you know, take a horse to Ascot or you know, if you have a good enough horse to do it, but
exactly.
But that's the hardest part. That, you know, I mean, you can go anywhere you want and run in races that people only dreamed about running or were kind of looked down upon as insane if they decided to take a horse to Europe, or to take one to Dubai would have been, you know, like
be amazing.
40 years ago, people would have said this person's lost their mind. But, you know, it's a great world that we live in now for the sport. And I think that's admirable that you want to take everybody, your crew, your clients, you want to take them on that ride, not just yourself.
Absolutely.
Open it up for everybody to enjoy.
Yeah. In this game, everybody plays a part. I mean, you definitely could not do it by yourself. It's so much work. I mean, from the bottom of the totem pole to the top, it's hard on everybody. And obviously, as everybody knows, the highest highs and the lowest lows. So when you are, you know, lucky enough to have a horse that good or at that caliber, it's great to involve everybody and enjoy it, because it definitely doesn't last.
Talking with Anna Mia here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. She is just getting started with her training career, and she has done an admirable job so far, and bigger things to come. If you want to check out her website, it is AnnaMiaRacing.com, and Mia is M-E-A-H, AnnaMiaRacing.com. You can read her full bio there and read about her story and her success as well. And don't forget, you can go back and listen to a podcast of this program after we finish up at horseracingradio.net. Listen at your leisure. Anna, one of the things that I always think is an interesting perk for horse trainers is that they get to meet several high-profile people from other industries, whether it be from the world of business or sports or even the world of movies, whatever it might be. For example, Jude trained horses for Kevin Costner for a time. There are a lot of celebrities from other sports and from other entities that are involved in racing. One of the people you got to meet was somebody that your husband buys horses for, and that's Eric Johnson, who is a horse owner. He also plays for the Colorado Avalanche. Tell me about that experience.
He's a really, really nice guy. He's also, you know, a friend of ours as well, and we went to one of his games when he played here at the Staples Center against the Kings. We were probably the only California people not rooting for the Kings, but he's a great guy, and you know what, he's all for it. He loves this sport. He's you know, been successful. I know that he has a lot of horses with a lot of different trainers, which I think is great. I love to see, you know, big names like that with more than one trainer, and to give everybody that opportunity, I think is awesome.
If you could get the chance to meet one celebrity that you could get involved with owning racehorses and train for them, who would that celebrity or that person be?
That's a hard question. You guys are asking real hard questions. you know, to be honest, I don't know, because I'm not really big into that side of things. I think it's great to see the big names and the celebrities out here. But I love to see the little guys do just as good. You know, I've met a lot of big timers and also the little timers that they don't have maybe as much money, but they own the small percentages, and they're great people. So it's good to see, even, you know, like I said, the smaller clients to the top ones do good and be along for it.
Yeah, it's fun to train for anybody, really.
Absolutely.
You know, you want to, and obviously you've talked about this, you want to give them that experience. You want to be able to share that feeling that you've had many times in your life with them, and you realize how important it is to them, and you want to give them that. It's like a gift that you can give.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope that one day I can do that for, I mean, it's hard to say I want to do it for all my clients. I mean, I want to, but I don't know if that's ideal, you know, for that to actually happen, but If I could, and if I get that opportunity, I definitely will.
Anna, there was an interview you did with America's Best Racing, and one of the questions that they asked you was the best racetrack food and where it could be found. And you and I are in perfect agreement on this one. Santa Anita, and you said they have great carved turkey sandwiches.
They really do.
They're awesome.
I don't know if anybody, you know, hasn't had them. If they haven't, they need to try them, because they are great.
All right, I'm going to ask you an easy question now. You said a couple of the questions
That's
were
better.
Made you think a little bit, and maybe you were unprepared. So how about this one? The other question they asked you in that ABR interview was your favorite cocktail? And this is something where this is right into our wheelhouse now. And you said wine or a vodka concoction. So what is your favorite vodka concoction?
You know, I always have Nola. If anybody's in Santa Anita, they know who Nola is at Nola's bar. I always have her make me something that has vodka in it. I just tell her, surprise me. She's always thrown together some fancy tricks, and I couldn't even tell you what's in them. I just know there's vodka in there, and it's usually pretty good.
As long as it tastes good, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
How about your favorite wine?
Oh, I love cabs. Love them. We went to Napa Valley this last summer for my birthday, and I really fell in love with Paradigm, which is a great wine, and I've had trouble finding it here in California. And I actually made an omen that I was going to buy a case of it when I won my first race, and I still haven't done that, so I really need to get on that.
Somebody send her a case of Paradigm Cab, will you?
Exactly.
Absolutely. Well done. And by the way, I'm very jealous that you made it to Napa Valley. That is one of the bucket list items that I have to check off at some point here before too long. I've heard it's gorgeous.
It is. It's awesome. And to be honest, I spent probably only 4 or 5 days there, but I really didn't think it was enough.
All right. Outside
you can't
of
go wrong.
Outside of horse racing, what else does Anna Mia enjoy doing?
I don't know anything but horse racing. I mean, I think that's probably every trainer's answer to that, because it's a 24/7 type of sport. I mean, even the best of us know you can't get away. I mean, there's always something to be done and always something to be doing at the barn.
Yeah, it makes it tough. It makes it tough to go to a concert even, right? If you go to a concert or a ball game, they usually end so late and you have to get up so early.
I've never been to a concert, and I'm almost 27, and I've still never been to a concert to this day.
You're kidding me. Really?
I know. Nobody believes it, but it is true. I've never been to a concert.
Single-minded Anna, they call her.
Exactly.
That's not a bad thing. We tell this story an awful lot when trainers give us that answer, that Richard Mandela gave us the same exact answer. This is all that he...
Really?
That's all he cares about. That's all he knows. I mean, he is so engrossed in his business of training racehorses, and you know, that's what makes him so good.
Exactly. I think that's what makes a lot of people successful in this game is just being nothing but, and I'm not saying you can't be, you know, if you have a hobby, but I guess when your hobby is horse racing, it's just a little perk.
Well, it's a lifestyle, really, you know.
Absolutely.
And the single-mindedness is absolutely a trait of Hall of Fame trainers, so you're well on your way.
I love it. Thank you. That's what I'm aiming for.
Yeah, another 4,372 wins, and we'll get you on the ballot for the Hall of Fame. You don't even have to train that many anymore to get in. But, yeah, you are well on your way, Anna, and hearing your story has been great. It's been a lot of fun to visit with you here tonight, and all the best moving forward. And we'll encourage people to visit your website and keep up with you, I guess, on social media too, right? Are you on social media?
Yes. I have Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So we're easy to find.
Yeah, there she is. Anna Mia, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Anna, been a delight. Thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. And all the best as you continue to train winners.
No problem. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you having me.
All right. Man, great kid, huh?
Yeah.
I don't get to say that very often. You say it more often than I
do.
Well,
yeah, but I'm older than you.
I love her philosophy, too, and she is just so, as you said, single-minded. That's what you have to be.
Yeah, you have
especially
to be
at that point in her career right now.
Yeah, well, you know, starting out's very tough. It's not an easy thing to do. She's making it look pretty easy.
Yeah, somebody please send her that case of wine, though. You have to do that.
Yeah, send her a horse that wins by 20. She can get the wine.
Yeah,
later.
Do that. She'll get her own wine. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.